Chapter 6. Father, enclosed is a self-explanatory letter which, please, read, and if unobjectionable in your opinion, forward to Mrs. Vinelander, whose address I don't know. For your own edification, although it hardly matters at this stage, Lucette never was my mistress, as an obscene ass, whom I cannot trace, implies in the write-up of the tragedy. I'm told you'll be back east next month. Have your current secretary ring me up at Kingston, if you care to see me. Ada, I wish to correct and amplify the accounts of her death published here even before I arrived. We were not traveling together. We embarked at two different ports, and I did not know that she was aboard. Our relationship remained what it had always been. I spent the next day, June 4th, entirely with her, except for a couple of hours before dinner. We basked in the sun. She enjoyed the brisk breeze and the bright brine of the pool. She was doing her best to appear carefree, but I saw how wrong things were. The romantic attachment she had formed, the infatuation she cultivated, could not be severed by logic. On top of that, somebody she could not compete with entered the picture. The Robinsons, Robert and Rachel, who, I know, planned to write to you through my father, were the penultimate people to talk to her that night. The last was a bartender. He was worried by her behavior, followed her up to the open deck, and witnessed but could not stop her jump. I suppose it is inevitable that after such a loss one should treasure its every detail, every string that snapped, every fringe that frayed in the immediate procession. I had sat with her through the greater part of a movie, Castles in Spain, or some title like that, and its liberal villain was being directed to the last of them, when I decided to abandon her to the auspices of the Robinsons, who had joined us in the ship's theater. I went to bed and was called around 1 a.m. Merritt time, a few moments after she had jumped overboard. Attempts to rescue her were made on a reasonable scale, but finally, the awful decision to resume the voyage, after an hour of confusion and hope, had to be taken by the captain. Had I found him bribable, we would still be circling today, the fatal spot. As a psychologist, I know the unsoundness of speculation as to whether Ophelia would not have drowned herself after all, without the help of a treacherous sliver, even if she had married her Voltimand. Impersonally, I believe she would have died in her bed, gray and serene, had V loved her. But since he did not really love the wretched little virgin, and since no amount of carnal tenderness could or can pass for true love, and since, above all, the fatal Andalusian wench who had come, I repeat, into the picture was unforgettable, I am bound to arrive, dear Ada and dear Andre, at the conclusion that whatever the miserable man could have thought up, she would have, pour conscious suboy, put an end to herself, all the same. In other more deeply moral worlds than this pellet of muck, there might exist restraints, principles, transcendental consolations, and even a certain pride in making happy someone one does not really love. But on this planet, Lucettes are doomed. Some poor little things belonging to her, a cigarette case, a tulle evening frock, a book dog's-eared at a French picnic, have had to be destroyed because they stared at me. I remain your obedient servant. Son, I have followed your instructions and ent that letter to the letter. Your epistolary style is so involute that I should suspect the presence of a code had I not known you belonged to the decadent school of writing, in company of naughty old Leo and consumptive Anton. I do not give a damn whether you slept or not with Lucette, but I know from Dorothy Vinelander that the child had been in love with you. The film you saw was, no doubt, Don Juan's Last Fling, in which Ada, indeed, impersonates, very beautifully, a Spanish girl. A jinx has been cast on our poor girl's career. Howard Hoole argued after the release that he had been made to play an impossible cross between two dons, that initially, Uslick, the director, had meant to base his fantasy on Cervantes's crude romance, that some scraps of the basic script stuck like dirty wool to the final theme, and that if you followed closely the soundtrack, you could hear a fellow reveler in the tavern scene address Hool twice as Quicks. Hool managed to buy up and destroy a number of copies, while others have been locked up by the lawyer of the writer, Osberg, who claims the Gitanila sequence was stolen from one of his own concoctions. In result, it is impossible to purchase a reel of the picture, which will vanish like the proverbial smoke once it is fizzled out on provincial screens. Come and have dinner with me on July 10th. Evening dress.
Cher ami, nous fûmes, mon mari et moi, profondément bouleversés par l'effroyable nouvelle. C'est à moi, et je m'en souviendrai toujours, que presque la veille de sa mort, cette pauvre fille s'est adressée pour arranger des choses sur le tobacof, qui est toujours bondé, et que désormais je ne prendrai plus, par un peu de superstition et beaucoup de sympathie pour la douce, la tendre Lucette. J'étais si heureuse de faire mon possible, car quelqu'un m'avait dit que vous aussi y seriez. D'ailleurs, elle m'en a parlé elle-même. Elle semblait tellement joyeuse de passer quelques jours sur le pont des Gaillards avec son cher cousin. La psychologie du suicide est un mystère que nul savant ne peut expliquer. Je n'ai jamais versé tant de larmes. La plume m'en tombe des doigts. Nous revenons à Malbrook vers la Mio. Bien à vous, Cordula de Pré Tobac.
Vaughn, André and I were deeply moved by the additional data you provide in your dear, i.e. insufficiently stamped, letter. We had already received through Mr. Grumpchevsky a note from the Robinsons, who cannot forgive themselves, poor, well-meaning friends, for giving her that seasickness medicine, an overdose of which, topped by liquor, must have impaired her capacity to survive, if she changed her mind in the cold, dark water. I cannot express, dear Vaughn, how unhappy I am, the more so as we never learned in the arbors of Ardis that such unhappiness could exist.
My only love, this letter will never be posted. It will lie in a steel box buried under a cypress in the garden of Villa Armina. And when it turns up by chance half a millennium hence, nobody will know who wrote it and for whom it was meant. It would not have been written at all if your last line, your cry of unhappiness, were not my cry of triumph. The burden of that excitement must be... The rest of the sentence was found to be obliterated by a rusty stain when the box was dug up in 1928. The letter continues as follows. Back in the States, I started upon a singular quest. In Manhattan, in Kingston, in Lodore, in dozens of other towns, I kept pursuing the picture which I had not, badly discolored, on the boat, from cinema to cinema, every time discovering a new item of glorious torture. A new convulsion of beauty in your performance. That, illegible, is a complete refutation of Odious Kim's odious stills. Artistically and ardisiacally, the best moment is one of the last, when you follow barefoot the Don who walks down a marble gallery to his doom, to the scaffold of Doña Adna's black-curtained bed. Around which you flutter, my Zagris butterfly, straightening a comically drooping candle, whispering delightful but futile instructions into the frowning lady's ear, and then peering over that Mauresque screen, and suddenly discovering in such natural laughter, helpless and lovely, that one wonders if any art could do without that erotic gasp of schoolgirl mirth. And to think, Spanish orange tip, that all in all, your magic gamble lasted but 11 minutes of stopwatch time in patches of 2 or 3 minute scenes. Alas, there came a night in a dismal district of workshops and bleary shebeens, when for the very last time, and only halfway, because of the seduction scene, the film black-winked and shriveled, I managed to catch the entire end of the letter is damaged.